الله الرحمن الرحيم الرحمن الرحيم إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا وعظيمنا وحبيب قلوبنا وشفيع نفوسنا أبا القاسم محمد طب القلوب ودوائها ونور الأبصار وضيائها، وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين الصادقين. الحمد لله الذي جعلنا من المتمسكين بولاية سيدي ومولاي علي بن أبي طالب. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. أما بعد، respected scholars, brothers and sisters in Islam, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. We continue in the third of our lectures, which examine the characteristics of Luqman. And we had looked at the history of Luqman. And the first characteristic which we had looked at was the fact that Luqman used to be a man who used to reconcile the differences between the people, and indeed between himself and his own family members. The second characteristic which we looked at was the fact that Luqman was not a prophet of God, although Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gave him a whole chapter of the Quran named after him. Chapter 31 of the Quran is, of course, Surah Luqman. The third characteristic of Luqman I'd like to look at, as you know, in a few days, or within a couple of days, we're going to go into the discussion between him and his son in the Quran. But the third characteristic I'd like to look at involving Luqman was the characteristic was that he was a slave. Luqman was a slave of black origin. And therefore I'd like to look at this area of the fact that here was a man who was seen as being one of the greatest figures in Islamic history, but who emerged from slavery as being a great figure. And therefore, when we look at this area, it is important for us to be able to discuss his position. One hadith narrates that Luqman served 4,000 prophets. And therefore, to have served 4,000 prophets, you have to be very old. And also at the same time, you must occupy quite a position of humility, to be reaching a level where you are serving those who are serving Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Amongst the stories of wisdom which involve him when he was a slave, was that on one occasion, one of his masters said to him, he said to him, Luqman, I want you to go and sacrifice for me a female sheep. And I want you to go and bring for me the two best parts of the sheep. Whatever are the two best parts of the sheep, I want you to bring it for me. So Luqman went and he sacrificed the female sheep, and he came back to his master. When he came back to his master, he brought him the heart of the sheep and the tongue of the sheep. And he said to him, these are the two best parts of the sheep. And so a few weeks later, the master said to him, I now want you to go and sacrifice another sheep for me. And I want you to bring for me the two worst parts of the sheep. So he went and he bought the heart of the sheep and the tongue of the sheep. And so the master said to him, when I asked you to bring me the best parts of the sheep, you bought me the heart and the tongue. And when I asked you to bring me the worst parts of the sheep, you bought me the heart and the tongue. He said, because the heart and the tongue, when it is protected, it is the best part of the creation. Whereas when the heart and the tongue is let loose, it's the worst part of the human being. And the worst part of all creation. Because when you really look at us, when our tongue is soft, we look like decent human beings. But when our tongue is venomous, we do not deserve to be called insan, we should be called haywan. Likewise, when our heart is pure, have you ever noticed those people whose hearts are pure? Even if you do not know them, you have such a vibe with them. There are some people, the first time you meet them, you have a vibe with them, but you don't know who he is. But straight away the heart connects. Then there are some people whose heart is an oven. However soft you try and be with him, his heart is an oven, it's a furnace. You cannot get through to the heart, it's made of stone. Salaamu alaykum, he replies to you as if the day is bleak and depression. Smile. A pure heart is one that smiles. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when he talks in the Quran, he says that the children of Israel, some of them reached such a level with their heart that it became like a stone. You try and speak with them, you're not going through anywhere. So Luqman said that the two best parts of the human being are the heart and the tongue. And the two worst parts are the heart and the tongue. It depends how you look after your heart and how you look after your tongue. But being a slave, the question which comes forward after this is the attack in many circles of the fact that when you look at Islamic history, you find that there were many slaves which were within Islam and were under the authority of our imams. Because when you look at our imams, you find that each one of them had a slave who was working in the house. For example, just to give you a couple of examples, if you look at Amir al-Mu'mineen, he had Qamba. And if you look at Fatima al-Zahra, she had Fadda. And if you look, for example, at Aba Abdullah al-Hussein, you could say that John in Karbala. And you look at Imam Zain al-Abidin, the famous hadith about how many slaves he used to free on the day of Eid. Many people come forward and ask the question, that does Islam allow slavery? And if it does, why does it allow slavery? And what are the conditions? Because here, Luqman is a slave. Is this a put down in Islam? That when you are a slave, does that mean you are lower than everyone else or no? When you want to examine this area, the only way you can examine it is by understanding what other empires thought of slaves, and how Islam used to view these thoughts, and how Islam reformed them, and the way Islam came and gradually, mark the word, gradually, reformed slavery. But which way did Islam gradually reform slavery? Did Islam do it just by saying you have to sell all your slaves? Or did Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala plan that slavery was to be protected in a different way? Also, what are the rights of the slave in your house? What rights do they occupy? Because especially in this country, we find we have many servants. Rather than calling them slaves, they would call them servants within the house. Although when you look at the way some people flick the finger, you might as well call it slave. And so you have to examine what are the rights of that person who is living within the house, as well as understanding this beautiful act which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala ordered to be performed, which changed the whole course of slavery in Islam. So when we want to examine Luqman and slavery, the first area we need to examine is the fact that all of these so-called modern empires, the Greeks and the Romans and the Persians, all of these were seen as being the height of intellectual thought. Whenever you talk about great civilizations, people tell you the Greeks, or they tell you the Persians, or they tell you the Romans. It is one thing for you to produce great philosophers, but it's another thing for you to produce inhuman philosophers. There's a difference between a person who can acquire facts and figures and a person who has understood humanity. Rasulullah's greatness was not the fact that he had so much facts and figures. It was because he understood the secrets of mankind. There's a difference. There are some people who have so many facts and figures, but they are inhumane people. Whereas when you look at these Greek philosophers, for example, Aristotle, he used to have a theory, he used to say, there are some people who are born to rule and others are born to serve. Now if I'm born with this theory, if my theory of life is that some of us are born to rule and some of us are born to serve, if I'm born into an upper class, aristocratic, ruling family, then I will think to myself that I deserve to rule because I was born to rule and all of you are my subjects. And none of you can leave captivity. Why? Because my theory about life, notice the Quran gives you a theory about life. Aristotle's theory, some of you are born to rule, some of you are born to serve. Those who are born to serve will not rule, and those who are ruling will not serve. That means if I am born into servitude, if I am born into a family which serves one of the houses in the community, I will never think I can have a rule, because it builds within me an inferiority complex. I think I'm born as a servant, I must remain as a servant. There is no way I can get out of the shackles of slavery. That's why even when you looked at people like Constantine, the Roman emperor, Constantine used to say that if the master has been bad to his slave, the slave cannot complain. Why? Because you were born into slavery. Who are you to complain? God willed you are a slave. That's why you find that in the Roman Empire and the Greek Empire, if a free woman married a slave, you kill the free woman and you burn the slave. Because the idea was you were born free. He was born a slave. How dare you marry a slave? And you found that this was one of the main points in all the so-called great civilizations. That's why it infuriates me when I see the Muslims always feeling that they are lower than everyone else. Why aren't we like the Greeks? Why aren't we like the Romans? We have a philosophy direct from the heavens. These people have a philosophy direct from oppression. Their philosophy did not allow people to actually become human beings. Every human being was born free. But we found that even the Egyptians had the subject of slavery. And who in Egypt, can you tell me in the Quran, was a prophet who became a slave in a house? Yusuf. Because when you look at Prophet Yusuf, some of us youth have had an easy childhood. We wanted PlayStation, it came on the door. You wanted internet, it was there on the door. You wanted to go holidays, it was there on the door. Prophet Yusuf, it's a bit hard when you've got 11 brothers in the same house. Those of you here who come from big families will know, it's not very easy when there's competition at home. But Prophet Yusuf had brothers who were jealous of him. And his story is of course mentioned in Surah 12 of the Quran. And when you go to Surah 12, there is an interesting verse, because as you know, his brothers took him. Where did they place him? They threw him in the well. When they threw him in the well, they went back to their father. The father said, where is he? They said, the wolf has eaten him. And here is his shirt. It's got the marks of blood on it. The beautiful thing was that when the father looked at the shirt, he said, this wolf is a very generous wolf. Because it eats the human being but leaves his shirt in excellent condition. Because when the wolf eats, I don't think it picks you out of the shirt and says, here, I'll fold it for you, iron it and give it back to you. So these brothers, unfortunately, instead of ripping up the shirt and making it like there was a fight, no. They just took the shirt off him and said, here's a bit of tomato juice. And they gave it back to their father and said, father, look, the wolf has eaten him. Father said, but the shirt is in good condition. I've never seen a wolf which just picks out. Either this wolf is skillful or you have missed your chance. So they threw him in the well. When they threw him in the well, he was, what used to happen was there were caravans which used to be going towards Egypt. Have you seen the film Gladiator? If you haven't, just pretend you have, just nod. In the film Gladiator, there were caravans which go towards the Colosseum. And they would sell slaves. As you know, there was that famous incident when they pick up the actor Russell Crowe and the man puts the chewing gum on his wound. He had the deep wound. You remember? Well, they used to do this. In the same way with Prophet Yusuf, what happened was that they would take Prophet Yusuf, they found him in the well. When they found him in the well, normally if you find a normal looking person, you sell him for a good price. But if you find a man who looks like a supermodel, you know that when you're going to bring him forward on the display, everyone's going to bid high. Because when they saw him, they are like, what is that? As in like, we've never seen a human being who looks that good. And so, these people, unfortunately, as a businessman, some people are good and some people just don't have the skill. Instead of selling him for a very good price, they sold him very cheap. When Quran says, وَشَرُوهُ بِثَمَنٍ بَخْسٍ دَرَاهِمَ مَعْدُودًا, in verse 20 of Surah 12, they said they sold him for a very cheap price. The caravan took him into Egypt. When the caravan went into Egypt, there would be a display of the slaves available for sale. Who bought him? Zulaykha and her husband, the treasurer of Egypt. وَقَالَ الَّذِي اشْتَرَاهُ مِنْ مِصْرَ مِصْرَ Egypt, Mصر لِمْرَأَتِهِ أَكْرِمِ مَثْوَاهُ عَسَىٰ أَيَنْفَعْنَا أَوْ نَتَّخِذَهُ وَلَدًا. There's a beautiful point which he says here. When he buys him, he tells his wife, the first thing, أَكْرِمِ مَثْوَاهُ. First thing, give him an honorable place. This treasurer of Egypt was a decent man. And that's why Yusuf repays the favor later on. Because in a society where slaves were looked down upon, the treasurer of Egypt, the first thing he did, when he saw and he had bought him, first thing, wasn't I want to adopt him as a son or make him a slave. First thing, give him an honorable place in the house. Why? If I'm going to have you working in my house, ironing in my house, cooking in my house, I'm not going to give you a bedroom where I wouldn't let my son sleep. And I'm not going to give you food which I wouldn't let a cat eat. You are in my house, I will clothe you with what I wear, and I will feed you with what I feed. That is, of course, when you follow Ahlul Bayt. If you don't follow Ahlul Bayt, then you give them a rubbish place to stay. And when you don't follow Ahlul Bayt, you give them the worst of clothing. But the follower of Ahlul Bayt knows that this person works in my house. I don't give him a place where the conditions are deplorable. Because he's my servant does not mean he's lower than me. The better I look after him, the more he's going to repay me. Although the aim shouldn't be repaying. Because in Islam, we don't want jaza when we help someone. Jaza will come. You want to do it because you're a human being. And you don't want to see another human being going through a hard time. So the first thing he said is, give him an honorable place. When Zulaykha was living with this young man, she was finding it difficult. Because imagine this young man, he walks in the house, he's serving food, he's serving drink, he's doing the gardening. Zulaykha had reached the level she couldn't take it anymore. And so she came, وَرَاوَدَتْهُ الَّتِي هُوَ فِي بَيْتِهَا عَنْ نَفْسِهِ وَغَلَّقَتِ الْأَبْوَابُ وَقَالَتْ هَيْتَ لَكَ. She locked the doors and she said, come in. Because I'm enchanted by it. The beautiful answer he gives is an answer which shows you a servant honoring his master. Some people say that he's referring to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Whereas the real tafsir is when he says, قَالَ مَعَاذَ اللَّهِ إِنَّهُ رَبِّ أَحْسَنَ مَثْوَاي. إِنَّهُ رَبِّ أَحْسَنَ مَثْوَاي is not my Lord has been good to me. My Lord in the sense that my master who bought me has been good to me. Some people think when he says, إِنَّهُ رَبِّ أَحْسَنَ مَثْوَاي means, my Lord as in Allah has been good to me. No. He is saying that master who bought me. When he bought me, he was honorable with me. I'm not going to commit adultery, number one, ma'ad Allah, I seek refuge from Allah. But number two, and the second of the table of priorities is that my master is a good man. And I don't want to go behind his back with his wife. Because he's been honorable with me, I'm going to be honorable with him. Of course, the difference with the Bible and the Quran, those who come and say the Quran is copied from the Bible. If the Quran was copied from the Bible, then Jesus would have gone with Zulaykha. But in the Bible, Jesus went with Zulaykha. No problem. Let's go. But of course, there's a difference between a book which is changed and a book which is from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. A book from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not make the prophets of God adulterous people. The Bible makes Dawood adulterous. Yusuf adulterous. Lul sleep with his daughters. Lot in the Bible, and we have a talk coming up, he sleeps with his daughters because there's no more men. Okay, there's no more men. It doesn't mean you go off and sleep with your daughters. Noah Well, Noah is found drunk in the middle of a vineyard. The great prophet of God, Noah, is drunk in the vineyard. And they say to me, Quran is copied from the Bible. If it's copied, why didn't we have these stories in the Quran? Lot sleeping with his daughters, and Dawood committing adultery, Yusuf committing adultery. Even tonight's lecture on Prophet Ayyub in tonight's majlis, the idea that they say Ayyub had a disease where ants were walking on his body. That's why in the world of hadith we have a set of hadith called Israeliyat. These are sets of hadith which were from the Christians and the Jews which entered Islamic books. Because there were some people, I won't mention any name, who were Christians before and they claimed they came to Islam, or they were Jews, came to Islam, suddenly Muawiyah had them as the writers of hadith. So amongst the slaves in Islamic history was whom? Was Prophet Yusuf. Another of the slaves in Islamic history, Hajar, mother of who? Ismail, wife of Prophet Ibrahim. When people come and say Islam attacks slavery or Islam doesn't give respect, Hajar was the mother of a prophet and the wife of a prophet. And you find that she was originally a slave girl. She was a gift given, and Sarah said to Ibrahim, marry her so you could have a child from her. When it come towards Rasulullah in Arabia, what happened was, Arabia slavery had two important areas. Number one, it was a form of business. People would buy and sell slaves. Number two, in Arabia, the prestige of a person was how many slaves he had. Therefore, Rasulullah could not convert or could not reform slavery straight away. Why? Because if Islam came down and said that anyone who owns a slave has to free that slave, then what would have happened would have been chaos in society. Do you know why? Because if I've got a slave in my house, he's got no education whatsoever. All he's ever done in my house is cook and clean. I pick him up from my house and I throw him in the real world. Who's going to employ him? No one's going to employ him. So what are they going to do with him? If there's no one to employ him, and there's no way he's going to earn his money, then what you're going to find is that he's going to go through criminal means. Islam says you don't reform completely. No, gradual reform. And the gradual reform was something outstanding which only the heavens could have given the earth. How? The first thing Islam did was that it put freeing a slave as part of kafara. How many times in kafara do you see it says either, for example, kill the sheep, slaughter the sheep, or it says freeing a slave? Islam didn't say straight away all of you must free slaves. No, it said if you were to commit a sin, part of the kafara, there are a number of options. One of them is freeing a slave. The Arab would look, he'd think, okay, what options do I have? Sheep? No, I want my sheep. Freeing a slave? Okay, free a slave. Slowly, more and more began to free slaves. Number two, the Quran defined a righteous person by what? By those who freed their slaves. We have a majlis coming up in a few nights about the meaning of righteous in Islam, al-birr or al-bar. In Surah 2, verse 177, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he talked about what it means to be righteous. And he said, amongst the areas of what it means to be righteous, imagine, I'm a Muslim, I'm in Arabia. I'm saying, Ya Rasulullah, I want to be righteous. How can I be righteous? Quran said, لَيْسَ الْبِرَّ أَن تُوَلُّ وَجُوهَكُمْ قِبَلَ الْمَشْرَقِ وَالْمَغْرِبِ. Righteousness is not that you turn your face towards the east or the west. Righteousness is the one who believes in God and the last day and the angels and the book and the prophets, and gives out of his wealth to those of the orphans and the poor and the needy and those who are in slavery. It meant that Islam, when it was coming to tell the Muslims, you want to know how you can be righteous people? Give to the orphan, give to the poor, free your slaves as well. Then the Quran came and said, and Islam came and said, that part of zakat, part of the treasury, when all the Muslims pay their zakat, was that part of the treasury should help freeing the slaves. Surah 9, verse 60 of the Quran, it tells us, إِنَّمَا الصَّدَقَاتُ, that the sadaqat go to who? إِنَّمَا الصَّدَقَاتُ لِلْفُقَرَاءِ وَالْمَسَاكِينِ وَالْعَامِلِينَ عَلَيْهَا وَالْمُؤَلَّفَةِ قُلُوبُهُمْ وَفِي الرِّقَابِ. That the treasury of the Muslims now had a duty. The treasury of the Muslims, part of its reform now was what? Was that it gives out wealth to whom? It gives out wealth to the poor and the needy and those who work for the religion of Islam and those whose hearts are inclined to the religion of Islam and towards those in slavery. Because one of the worst areas was that when a master had a slave in Arabia, they wouldn't set for them a contract when they could leave. It's as if the master would tell the slave, you're working with me forever, you can't get out. Islam said, no, now we begin a contract between the master and his slave. Where? Go to Surah 24, verse 31. Surah 24, verse 31. What does it say? It spoke about marriage. Because as you know, Surah 24, verse 30, is the famous verse which we all recite. Surah 24, verse 32. How many of you have heard this verse? وَأَنْكِحُ الْأَيَامَ مِنْكُمْ وَالصَّالِحِينَ مِنْ عِبَادِكُمْ وَإِمَائِكُمْ إِنْ يَكُونُوا فُقَرَاءَ يُغْنِهِمُ اللَّهُ مِنْ فَضْلِهِ. Then in verse 33, what did it say? وَالَّذِينَ يَبْتَغُونَ الْكِتَابَ مِمَّا مَلَكَتْ أَيْمَانُكُمْ. When the Quran said مَلَكَتْ أَيْمَانُكُمْ, what does it mean? It means the people you possess of your right hand, the slaves who you own. Okay? فَكَاتِبُوهُمْ إِنْ عَلِمْتُمْ فِيهِمْ خَيْرًا. Quran said that before, when you used to have slaves, you didn't give them a single contract. They had to live in your house forever. Now you give them a contract. You make with them a contract, إِنْ عَلِمْتُمْ فِيهِمْ خَيْرًا, that you know the people you are making a contract, understand a contract. Don't make a contract with someone, because what the idea was, that if I have a slave, 60 Imam used to say, you should not have that slave in your house for longer than 6-7 years, according to a hadith. Unless, of course, that person sees it as a privilege to work for you, you shouldn't have him longer than that period. So what the Islam came and said, make a contract. Make a contract with this person that if you work for me for 7 years, and you earn $300, when you earn your $300, you can buy yourself out of your servitude and you can go and work somewhere else. Before, the slave had no rights at all. He had to stay in that house. There was no option. Whereas when Islam came forward and said, no, now you make a contract with them and do not con them. Because there were some Arabs, as you know, some Arabs are con artists. And what they used to do, he'd say to him, work for me for 7 years. And we say if you earn $50 million, then you couldn't leave. Well, Bill Gates is working for you. $50 million. Who's going to earn $50 million working as a slave? So what happened was, Quran said, make a contract which is reasonable. Then the Quran said what? وَآتُوهُم مِّن مَالِ اللَّهِ الَّذِي آتَاكُمْ. Give away from the wealth Allah has given you. Which means what? Which means if I sold my slave, 7 years you work for me, you have to earn $300. After 6 years, he's earned $280. How much is left? $20. But he's working and working hard, he just can't earn the last 20. I should give out the last 20 to him and say, don't worry, leave. Not I become stingy like some people. You have to earn 300.00, then you leave. Imam told Malik al-Ashtar, have mercy on the people in the way you'd want Allah to have mercy on you. The way some of us treat the slave, I don't know what we're going to get on the Day of Judgment. I tell you that. I really don't know what we're going to get. Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will tell you, you've now come to me, the way you treated my servant, watch how I'll treat you. And then there's another group of people who know, because they're so good to their servants, Allah will say, the way you were good with my servants, I will look after you. So what happened was, the Quran then continued in the same verse to go to the female slaves. There wasn't just male slaves. Sometimes when we hear slave, we think male. Quran said there were female slaves. Quran, what did it say? وَلَا تُكْرِهُ فَتَيَاتِكُمْ عَلَى الْبِغَاءِ إِنْ أَرَدْنَ تَحَصُّنًا. They used to make their female slaves prostitutes. You see, in different countries in the world today, there is a prostitute slave trade. You know some Arab countries where it's well known. You go there on holiday, there's more of them standing near your hotel than there is probably in Vegas. And they say Islamic country. When there is a country which is full of prostitution, that's when you know it's going to end one day. Bala will come one day. It's going to all go. Now it's high-rise towers. And people are being taken and deceived by it. But it's the land of filth. Prostitutes everywhere. Arabia was the same. You want to know what Jahiliyyah is? Take message from Arabia and apply to 21st century. Arabians, female slaves, were prostitutes. They would force and they would make brothels. And these brothels would be filled of 6-7 prostitutes. And everyone would be welcome. It used to be known as the Red Flag District. In the West today, they have a city in Europe called Red Light District. There, they didn't have, unfortunately, electricity. So they couldn't use the light, so they used flags. And this is all in the books. Go in the books of Hadith. It's not my words. If it's my words, no. Go in the books of Hadith. See how your Imams have described these places. Red flag. A red flag would be outside the house. It would indicate to you that this is what the females were being oppressed by. And they tell me, Rasulullah oppressed the female. If it was not for Rasulullah, no female would have even come out of this. Rasulullah came, he said, do not force your females into prostitution. A female was not created to be in that world. And so what he said, free them, because there was Abdullah ibn Ubay was the chief of the hypocrites. He used to force them into prostitution. Islam came and moved this. So Islam came and brought a gradual reform. That's why when you look number three at the Imams of Ahlul Bayt and the fact that they had slaves, people say, how could our Imams have slaves? This is not acceptable in Islam. It wasn't that the Imam wanted a slave. It was that the slave found it an honor to be a servant of an Imam. Wouldn't you like to have been a person who gives water to Amir al-Mu'mineen? Ah, this is heaven. That's why those who have a relationship with 12th Imam, I don't even want to be a secretary or a general or anything. Let me wash the soles of his feet. That's enough. That's the biggest honor. Wash the sole of the feet. Is it something degrading? No. I'm washing the feet of purity. They can never be unclean, but I'll still wash. When Qambar was with Amir al-Mu'mineen, he found he was in heaven. He didn't need to go to Jannah. I'm in heaven already. Because Ali ibn Abi Talib's heart is the heart of an angel. And so Qambar used to say, Amir al-Mu'mineen, he used to never get angry with me. But he said, only on one occasion he was unhappy with me. And he said on that occasion was because I had hoarded some money. And I had hidden it. Save up money. And he says, Amir al-Mu'mineen came to me and said, Qambar, why do you hoard your money? Isn't there enough poor people out there to give money to? And you are planning to save this much money? He said, take the money and give out to the poor. There are people without anything. He said, that's the only time. He said, otherwise, his generosity was something unreal. He said, one day a person came I was standing by Ali ibn Abi Talib's horses. He said, one day a person came and he said to me, I want some bread. So I went to Amir al-Mu'mineen and I said to him, oh Amir al-Mu'mineen, there's a poor person who's come. He said, yes Qambar, what does he want? He said, he wants some bread. Amir al-Mu'mineen said, give him the bread. He said, but the bread is on the horse. He said, give him the bread and the horse. He said, but the horse is connected to 10 of our horses. He said, give him the bread and the 10 horses. All of a sudden, Qambar jumped. Ali ibn Abi Talib looked at him and said, Qambar, what's wrong with you? Why did you just jump? He just jumped. He flew and fell on the ground. He said, because you are so generous. I am connected to the 10th horse. I thought that you might give me away to the person as well. When Fadda was in the house of Fatima al-Zahra, and Fadda I'd like to examine further tomorrow, because tomorrow we look at the fact that Luqman was black and the position of racism in Islam. But when Fadda was in the house, she learned Quran of Fatima al-Zahra. You find, for example, our fourth Imam, his servants used to find it an honor to serve him. They would love being around him. That he used to have a servant who would learn Quran from him, another who would learn Hadith. That's why after the Battle of Karbala, he would take many of these servants and he would tell them, do you know what they did to my father on the 10th of Muharram? And he would show them how low humanity could be, but then he would explain to them that all of you are free men, you are not slaves, because you are born free with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Do you know why? Because the religion of Islam did something unbelievable. It came to the Arabs and it said, normally in your words, when you talk about abd, when you talk about abd, you say that an abd is something low. Whereas the highest level a Muslim can reach in his life is if Allah calls him abd. Look how Islam changed it. The Arabs, when they would call you abd, it means you're low. Whereas Islam said that when we say to a person he is our abd, that means he's the highest. That's why in Salah, what do we say? Ashhadu anna Muhammadan abdu wa rasul. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wahdahu la sharika lah. Wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu first, then rasuluh. Why? Because the fact that he was abd was higher than him being rasul. That's why on the night of Mi'raj, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, Subhanalladhi asra abdi. Glory be to the Lord who raised his Rasul, his Nabi, his Wasi, his Abd. Because Rasulullah has reached such a high level that he was now in a stage where Allah said, he is my Abd. He cannot get any higher. أشهد أن محمداً عبده ورسوله. That's why Nabi Musa was once going towards Mount Sinai. On his way he saw this man crying. Nabi Musa said, are you alright? He said, oh Prophet of God, can you do me one favor when you go to Sinai? Can you ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to forgive me for all the things I have done wrong? Nabi Musa said, no problem.